Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I am your host of Yoga, Birth, Babies, and today we're combining two of my favorite topics into one conversation. We're going to talk about yoga and anatomy, specifically hypermobility and how it relates to the pregnant and postpartum body. And of course, we dive into talking about diastasis recti and the SI joint and overstretching and the pelvic floor. It was a really fun conversation. I absolutely loved it. So I invited Libby Hinesley back to have this conversation. So she was on the podcast, I don't know, a year and a half ago, and we talked about the psoas. I'll make sure I have that in the show notes because I love the psoas. It's one of my favorite muscles. I don't know who else out there. Do you have a favorite muscle? Let me know if you do. All right. So let me tell you a little bit about Libby. She is a physical therapist, a yoga therapist, and a longtime yoga teacher and trainer. She specializes in treating yoga-related injuries, chronic pain, and hypermobility syndromes. And as I mentioned, she was on about a year and a half ago, but now she's coming on to talk about her new book about hypermobility and yoga called Yoga for Bendy People. So it's really a wonderful conversation. I think it's important for those that are pregnant postpartum that are practicing yoga to listen. But I also think it's really important for yoga teachers to listen to this conversation. At the end of the conversation, we talk about the idea that people are often told, oh, just do what feels good. But sometimes we don't have the proprioception to know what feels good necessarily. And for hypermobile bodies, the proprioception can definitely be more challenging. And for yoga teachers, understanding what is happening in the pregnant and postpartum body, and especially for our hypermobile students. So I think this is a really interesting and important and fun conversation. So I hope you enjoy that. Before we get to that, I just want to touch base on some stuff going on at the studio. So things are moving along in a really beautiful way. I have to tell you, there have been some bumps in the road that I was thinking, oh my gosh, are classes ever really going to boom again? And I'm excited. They are. It's really beautiful. We've turned a corner here in New York City where things are starting to really come alive again. So I'm excited that we have our in-person classes, but that doesn't mean we're going to turn our back on our online classes because we have people that tune in from all over the country, all over the world. Different people in different countries are tuning in. And I don't want to turn that off. I think this is really about serving and supporting each other's community. So if you are online and you can't make it to class, no worries. You can check out our live stream or our hybrid classes or our re-release. And if you're in New York City or the surrounding area and want to come take classes, I hope you do. And let me know that you are coming to class because of the podcast. I'd really appreciate that. You can check all this out on our website at prenatalyogacenter.com. And while you're there, go ahead and grab our free downloadable 5 Simple Solutions to the Most Common Pregnancy Pains so that you you can take care of your body, and I want to help you with that. So you can grab that downloadable. When you can't make it to a full class, you can do a couple poses that can help release some tensions and discomforts. And of course, this applies for postpartum as well. And then the last thing I just want to remind you is if you are a yoga teacher and you're interested in diving deeper into what we offer, our methodology, check out our website and look at our teacher training. We'll be offering it twice a year online and twice a year in person. And then once a year, we do a big weekend postpartum training. I absolutely love teaching postnatal. It's one of my favorite classes to teach, and it gets me really excited to share that knowledge with yoga teachers. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, please enjoy my conversation with Libby.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Libby, yay, we have a second podcast together. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy to be back.
Thank you. Well, you wrote a book about something near and dear to my heart, hypermobility. As a very hypermobile person, when you wanted to talk about this, I'm like, absolutely, count me in. So awesome. I'm so excited. All right. So I've had the chance to get to know you, and hopefully some of our community members have as well. But why don't you just give a little intro about yourself again and how you decide to become a physical therapist?
Sure. So I started teaching yoga in about 2005, and that just came out of my own interest in yoga. And my interest in yoga came out of a lot of my physical discomfort that I was, you know, have always dealt with, which I'll get back to in a minute. But so in starting to teach yoga, I got more and more interested in the body and learning about injuries, including my own. And over a few years, that just led me to be interested in physical therapy. So I ended up going into PT, and now I've been teaching yoga about 18 years almost, and then being a PT for about 10 years. And I really love that combination. It's kind of a perfect fit for me.
It really is. I think it's amazing that a yoga teacher has more knowledge than, you know, as a physical therapist, there's just so much more. And I'll try not to get too off topic, but there's many times it goes two ways. You either have some yoga teachers, and I hope I don't fall into this, that feel like they know a lot, but maybe don't. And then you have some yoga teachers that don't know, really know anything about the body. And I think what you're bringing is a beautiful combination.
Well, thank you. I agree. You know, yoga teachers are in an interesting kind of pickle because they deal with the body and speak about the body all the time, but really don't have a lot of training in anatomy and functional anatomy. Mm-hmm. But what I love about working with yoga teachers, training them and teaching them anatomy in particular, is that they're so interested in, you know, just, and learning that, learning more about the body just builds their confidence.
Yes.
And that confidence gets parlayed to their students, actually, right? Mm-hmm. So their students are learning how to explore their own bodies even better. So I'm really interested in kind of elevating the yoga teacher skill set, basically.
I'm so happy about that. I personally love anatomy. I find it fascinating. I remember I was working with one yoga teacher who also loved anatomy. We had a whole conversation about how we would look at people, how they walk on the street, and then start to like examine, like, okay, their arches are falling in. They're slightly externally rotated. What's happening? What do we think about that line up to their pelvic floor? Like we had this whole, and then I started thinking, oh gosh, people are listening to us. And then they look, notice that we're watching them. So it became this whole like a crazy conversation about how we look at people and like unknowing people. So I don't know if you'd ever do that, like look at a body and be like, what's the story behind that?
All the time. Because I love being kind of a detective.
Yes.
You know, I kind of see myself in part a detective and a bit of a mechanic, but also sort of a student of the mystery of human beings too.
It's fascinating. So we're going to talk about hypermobility, a word I've thrown out a couple times now. So let's go ahead and define it. What is hypermobility?
Great question. Good place to start. So the tricky thing is that out there in the world, people use terms in a lot of different ways. So when we talk about, let's just talk about mobility for a moment first.
Sure.
and the difference between mobility and flexibility. And I have to just say, not everyone uses these consistently either, but in the world of hypermobility syndromes, they are generally used in this way. Okay. Flexibility typically is going to be referring to what's going on in the muscles to allow movement. What part of your movement is, controlled by the muscle tone, the muscle length, and that's going to involve the nervous system to a large degree. And then mobility is going to describe more what's going on at the joints. What's the laxity of joint capsules, ligaments, the tendons that cross the joint and the fascia within the whole myofascial system, that the quality of laxity or not laxity, what does that allow to happen? So when we talk about mobility, we're really talking about that piece, and also bone shape is going to play a role there too. So someone can have a lot of mobility in their joints, but they may also not have a lot of flexibility. So those things don't always go together. In other words, when someone has hypermobility, which simply describes the ability of a joint to move more than is normal, and I'll talk about normal in a second, it's just a descriptive term, okay? But sometimes their muscles get really chronically contracted in the presence of joint hypermobility. So that can get confusing, and it can also get visually confusing when you're watching people move. But so hypermobility, again, is just descriptive. It describes joints that move more than normal. What is normal? Well, there's usually a range of normal in every joint in the body. Researchers have, you know, pretty much found among humans, how much do human hips move, basically, right? And we have kind of guidelines about what should we expect as normal range of motion in a human body. And again, sometimes that's a range, like hip external rotation. For example, normal hip external rotation is 45 to 60 degrees, something in there, right? It's not 90 degrees, but a lot of times we see 90 in yoga. But anyway, so a hip that rotates 90 degrees, that's an example of hypermobility.
Or ruining your hip. Sorry, I just had to say that because I had a big conversation with some students the other day about the hips in Warrior 2. I'll try not to go on too much of a tangent. Where my studio is on the Upper West Side, we are close to Lincoln Center, so we have a lot of the dancers from ABT and City Ballet, and I always joke, I'm like, you guys are not them. I'm not expecting your hips to square straight to the side. In fact, a lot of those dancers have very problematic hips because we're forcing that rotation and well beyond what our bodies have the capacity to do for most of us.
Exactly. Yeah. And so dance, as well as yoga, often attracts people who have joint hypermobility just at baseline, just genetically, you know, predisposed to have hypermobile joints because they often feel very successful in those activities. All right. And then the people who have more typical human bodies then come into those spaces and think they're also supposed to move that way. So they, you know, spend years forcing their hip to rotate that much, right? Even when it's not going to happen and it's not even really to be expected. So it sets up a big problem, kind of a background problem when we talk about the aesthetics of yoga culture and asana performance. Mm-hmm. And that really does set the backdrop, a bigger picture, in what are the challenges that hypermobile yoga practitioners are going to face when they come to practice. But I described hypermobility, that in and of itself isn't a pathology. Just want to be clear about that. Some people have joint hypermobility and it's really not that much of a problem. They don't have any symptoms related to it. However, a great many people have what we could call symptomatic hypermobility, where maybe they have joint dislocations or subluxation, which is a partial dislocation, or they have joint pain or they have myofascial pain. And they may have a whole slew of other related issues that are related to differences in their body due to changes in collagen, like a genetic difference in their collagen structure and function. And that could lead to digestive issues and mental health issues and kind of autoimmune type issues. So it becomes more far reaching. And that's when we call it a hypermobility syndrome. So I just want to separate those out. In both of those cases, you know, when you approach the perinatal period, we could have special challenges.
Yeah, I want to go into that, but I want to back up. That's really fascinating. Make sure it's clear to everybody what you're talking, the difference in hypermobility, where I'm going to put myself in that category. I am very loose jointed. My hips just flop all the way, like my in Baddha Konasana, feet together. My knees are completely down. Just like, and that has been my baseline since birth. And I have students that their knees are way up and they're like, will my knees ever go down? I'm like, does it matter? But I hear their desire. And I've said, you know, sometimes it's how the shape of the acetabulum, the hip socket and the femur bone. So the hypermobility, like a person like myself, it's starting to get a little achy as I approach where I am my age. But then there's a difference between basic asymptomatic hypermobility and then hypermobility syndrome. I just want to make sure people are super clear on that.
Yeah, exactly. It's an important distinction because the risk is when we start learning about hypermobility, especially if we're yoga teachers, we might start to get really concerned when we just visually see a student display a lot of mobility. Mm-hmm. And I don't want people to go scaring their students to be like, you're hypermobile. You know, this is really scary because it's not. It's not
well,
really.
That's another conversation about language. We don't want to do that.
Exactly. But, you know, the hypermobile body has some particular, we need to be mindful and we can really help support it better in yoga practice, particularly during pregnancy and postpartum. But it's nothing to be super alarmed about and alarm your students about. So if there's a big leap from looking at someone who moves a lot, right, whose joints, you know, flop around, and then like diagnosing them with a hypermobility syndrome. That's a big leap. So yes, it's important to make that clear.
So then let's also talk about how specifically, because the community that's listening, likely either a yoga teacher or someone pregnant or just had a baby. So why are pregnant people more likely to have joint hypermobility? And then want to follow that with what should they do about that?
Yeah, good. So people who are pregnant are more likely to have joint hypermobility because of their hormonal changes during pregnancy, and specifically because of the relaxin that is, you know, released during pregnancy throughout the whole body, and it helps prepare the body to spread its bones out, basically, for childbirth. And so, you know, in a vaginal childbirth, of course, the pelvis has to come apart essentially. And in order to allow a person to come through, a tiny person, but you know, pelvis isn't that tiny. So it has to open up. And what allows that to happen is hormonal laxity, we could call it. So the relaxin helps to literally soften up the ligaments that hold your pelvis together. And so that when it comes to a vaginal delivery, the pelvis is better able to open up. And literally come apart, you know, temporarily so that the birth can happen. Now that relaxin isn't just targeting the pelvic ligaments. It's not able to be that specific. So you've got it all over the place. So all of your joint capsules, all of your ligaments, all those things that really provide passive stability to our body. And by passive, I just mean non-contractile. Muscles provide active stability by contracting. But then you've got all these collagenous connective tissues that provide passive stability. Those are going to be softer, floppier is the word I like to use, but the technical term is more lax. So they have more give to them. They're more easily stretched and spread out, and they don't recoil or return to their normal position as quickly.
Can you give some examples in the body where people can start to think about the floppiness?
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, when people become pregnant, they're like, whoa, I mean, all of a sudden I can do a split. Or
yeah, I call it borrowed flexibility.
Yes. Yes. And so people may notice, wow, I have all this new mobility because things are softening up. I just maybe not as restricted. So you can notice it, I guess, in any, you know, any area of the body. But what's tricky about that is sometimes along with joint hypermobility, we also get more muscle tension. So I call this a hypermobile body. I call a bendy body. So bendy people feel tight. They feel tight, even though they have big ranges of motion. A quintessential example is a yoga practitioner dropping into a split. And while she's there, she's complaining about feeling tight. That's sort of the image that really comes to my mind when I think about some of the complexities of having hypermobility is that people often feel tight because their muscles are working overtime. They're working extra hard to provide stability when the body senses that passive stability isn't fully on board. There's a compensation.
So what I find fascinating about that is we have a lot of people that come to yoga. It's like the perfect storm who have natural hypermobility. Cause it, like you said, it's kind of enjoyable to be like, I can just create the shapes and the movements with my body. I guess I can only say I speak from my experience. I don't want to put that on anyone else. And then when someone's pregnant and they have all that relaxin and the progesterone and the estrogen, like everything is softening the fascia, the smooth muscle tissue, the ligaments and tendons. And then you have the muscles saying, oh my gosh, why are you so loose? I better work harder. How that affects the pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. Can we dive into that? Cause I find that fascinating because where I work with pregnant folks is when that pelvic floor is overly engaged or imbalanced, that can create a lot of problems with birth.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. So the person with hypermobility, whether they are pregnant or not, has a much higher risk for pelvic floor dysfunctions, for particularly pelvic organ prolapse. So when we get into postpartum, that's going to be the person with hypermobility is at really high risk of developing that on top of the already risk from, you know, just from pregnancy. And yes, part of that is just because of the laxity of the passive structures, all the ligaments. And in that setting, just like you said, the muscles have to be contracting chronically. So you can definitely end up with a set of pelvic floor muscles that are chronically contracted to try to create stability in the pelvis. And that then leads to other problems. And that's so often the case with hypermobile people is that it's their compensatory muscle tension that is the driver for a lot of their pain and other challenges. But the underlying issue is instability. So the answer to all that, the long-term answer, and ideally it starts before pregnancy, but at least, you know, we can learn about it and aim for the future. The long-term answer is progressive strength training, mm-hmm. progressively helping the muscular system be strong enough to function and provide stability without getting crazy with all the over contraction and to give it time to rest and relieve some of that tension through all kinds of different techniques we can talk about.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Yeah. I know we have other stuff to talk about, but let's feel like we're leading. Actually, let's take a super quick break and when we come back. I want to hear about some of the other techniques people can do to help their pelvic floor and their body open when their muscles are feeling really contracted. All right, we'll take a super quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so I feel like I opened a really big can of worms. So as you were saying, the body, like the muscles are trying to sustain what, because of all that looseness. And then we end up with tightness that we might even not thought. I have a lot of people come in that are super flexible. And we start talking about the pelvic floor. They assume that it needs more toning. So what kind of techniques can people do to help their muscles relax when they might be really engaged?
Yeah. So I really like to use self-massage. That's kind of my favorite preferred method of dealing with muscular tension in the hypermobile body. And when it comes to pelvic floor self-massage, you know, you can kind of learn some internal techniques, especially if you work with a pelvic PT and maybe get some training on self-massage that way. But you can also address it with like a therapy balls on the outside. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that during pregnancy, you know, exactly. But certainly there's external massage is done in pregnancy to help prepare those tissues to be able to spread out and be supple for childbirth and all of that. So that would be my go-to. And then beyond that, relaxation training, you know, anything we can do to turn down the nervous system will help to turn down muscle tension. And then when you think about that hypertonicity or that chronic contraction in the pelvic floor, you're right. It doesn't need more toning, quote unquote, but it does. We do need to move in the direction of more functional strength. But where mm-hmm. that needs to start is in the releasing of all that tension. Because, yeah. you know, a set of pelvic floor muscles that is always contracted, well, if you ask it to contract more, it's got nowhere to go. It's got nowhere to go. It's already kind of used up. So we want to start getting suppleness into those tissues. Suppleness so that we can get full excursion. The pelvic floor can expand and descend and then, you know, contract and move up and have some mobility to it. Suppleness, I like to call it, so that it can then be more responsive to your longer term strengthening, kind of plans. But strengthening and, you know, suppleness are two sides of the same coin. We can't have one without the other.
So knowing that as a yoga teacher and a lot of yoga students are listening to this, I have found that when I've been adding more and more strength work to my teaching, I start to fall a little outside the typical yoga canon. I do a lot of dynamic squats. Not all the way down, but like your feet are about mat distance, slightly turned out, and you're having a nice long spine reaching back and then pushing it to the floor to come up, getting the glutes. And I've kind of made up, it's like a warrior three-ish, but it's really like a Romanian deadlift. I do reverse clamshell. So I'm starting to bring in more and more strengthening for the glutes and the hamstrings, the adductors and the abductors and the glute med and minimus. But it really often, there's not a lot of yoga poses because I feel like a lot of the yoga canon is a lot of stretching mm-hmm. or a lot of quad work. We look at the legs, or maybe if you try to draw your heels in certain poses, it hits the adductors. What do you think of what kind of poses would you teach if you were trying to think of more strengthening the pelvic girdle?
All those things that you describe would be exactly the direction I would move with it. Really getting the glute muscles, gluteus maximus, gluteus medius, the hip extensors, the hip abductors, adductors, pretty much all around the pelvic girdle, even the low back muscles. So your squatting stuff is exactly, you know, really developing all of those muscle groups. And that's going to be a big answer to the underlying problem is more pelvic stability throughout so that there are deep stabilizing muscles aren't feeling, you know, that they have to hold up the world because they have actually some help from
their best friends. That's what I like to think teammates. Of them as.
Yeah. Their best friends around them. Exactly.
I think that's why I think that yoga is so many people that are hypermobile are drawn to yoga, because it actually doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't require a ton of strength, but really celebrates the flexibility. And that's why I'm so glad that we'll talk about your book, but that you're highlighting the hypermobility almost problem and that we need strength to balance all this.
Right. And I think that part of that, I was talking with a friend the other day that it's almost like yoga has a branding problem, and the brand is this glorification of stretching and hypermobility, but it doesn't have to be that way because in the end, yoga itself doesn't care at all about your mobility, right? It really is totally irrelevant to it. So it's really an image problem that we have with yoga. where the collective narrative is, oh, yoga is about stretching. Well, it's not at all about stretching. And even asana practice isn't about stretching. It's about getting to know yourself, mm-hmm. and getting to know your unique needs in a structural way so that you can go do the rest of the work of yoga.
I like that. It's a branding problem. I love that.
Yeah. You know, we need to sort of change the image here so that we don't get caught up in things that really aren't serving us and also are not relevant to the pursuit of yoga.
Yeah.
But we don't have to practice in that way. So little things we can do to help improve our stability through asana practice, even just narrowing our stance. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we get into like, in standing postures, we just have our feet so far apart. If we just bring them a little closer, oh, all of a sudden we feel so much more stable. Mm-hmm. So that's one really easy thing to do. And even when it comes to stretching, turns out there are tons of ways to stretch. So we can do dynamic, we can do active, or we can do floppy, passive, static at end range. And that floppy, passive, static stretching at end range is where we're likely to get into most trouble with hypermobility. Mm-hmm. But let's say we back away from end range and we engage the muscles that we're stretching, like an isometric stretch, then that's a different ballgame, right? Mm-hmm. We're still spreading out our tissues and stretching, but we don't have to go all the way to the end range to find something interesting. We can really back up, create some boundaries around our movement and find it might be a more subtle sense of stretch, but it may also serve us a little bit better. And then we're building stability at the same time.
I totally agree. I just actually filmed a reel about this where I was talking about Anjaney Asana like that. A lot of people just kind of fall right into it. And I totally did in my younger years. And then I learned about the stability and that once we find our stability, we then can explore different parts of our body to open. Like I started really enjoying working with lifting and opening more through the thoracic while I was stable at the base. Mm-hmm. So I find that kind of an interesting exploration. All right. I'm going to pull us back on topic about how does hypermobility affect postpartum healing?
Okay. Yeah. So let me just kind of a little bit back up and say there's pregnancy related hypermobility. That's just say you're a normal, you got normal connective tissue and you're coming into pregnancy. Well, in pregnancy, you're a little floppier, right? Your connective tissue is going to be floppier, more lax because of the relaxin. Mm-hmm. But let's say you're not starting out with typical connective tissue. Let's say you're starting out with a hypermobility syndrome and you've got different collagen going into the ballgame here, right? Well, then it's a super double whammy when you get into pregnancy. And that is the case for so many yoga practitioners because yoga is self-selecting already for people who have more laxity in their connective tissues. And so a lot of those people then become pregnant and now they've got laxity on top of more laxity. Mm-hmm. And that's going to also impact postpartum healing. So the person with a hypermobility syndrome is going to heal more slowly, period, from anything. Okay. They may have more significant or kind of impaired scarring. The scars are more like flat and wide, and they're going to heal, tissues heal more slowly. And so that's that sort of double whammy person. They're also going to have more risk for postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression because they have higher risk for that at baseline anyway. They're also likely to have a lot more fatigue and need sort of encouragement at pacing and really, really getting a lot of support with just the day-to-day tasks of baby, you know, caretaking. So that, and more risk for pelvic organ prolapse, more risk for musculoskeletal complaints postpartum, you know, even from just caretaking the baby, the holding and the, all the different things, not just from the pelvic issues that occurred during pregnancy and childbirth. So there's a lot to it, you know, but let's say that person who started out with normal connective tissue, you know, they had some hormonal laxity in pregnancy. That's going to continue postpartum. So that hypermobility that's pregnancy related continues in postpartum, especially as long as if the parent is breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. So there's this hormonal changes. So, you know, again, not all the people who have hypermobility have a hypermobility syndrome, but I would say a great number of them do.
Can we circle back to prolapse? I find that I feel like that's a topic that is not talked about enough because it's, when I've done some research on it, it is a surprising amount of people have some level of bladder or, rectocele or cystocele or cervical, a little bit of cervical prolapse. Can you talk about what that is and then why more hypermobile folks have that?
Yeah. So a prolapse, let's say a bladder prolapse, which is most common, although the rectal prolapse is common after childbirth too. But basically, if you think about a female pelvis from front to back, you've got bladder, you've got vaginal vault, and you've got rectum kind of from front to back. They're just all packed right in there. And in a bladder prolapse, it's basically where the bladder is just falling back into the vagina, and then it's basically getting pushed down. And so the bladder is pushing into the vagina and coming down. And sometimes you can even see it coming out the vagina. What you would see or feel is vaginal tissue, but it's being pushed out by the bladder. Similarly, a rectocele is the rectum is coming forward into the vagina and pushing down out the body. So everything's prolapsing through the vagina, but what you see is that vaginal tissue that's getting pushed on by the organs either, you know, to either side of it, or in some cases, the uterus may be prolapsing down through the vaginal vault, and even intestines can. So that's the idea of the prolapse. And all those tissues are made of collagen. So when you have more laxity in your collagen, whether it's a temporary situation during the perinatal period or whether you've got that at baseline, you have more laxity in those tissues. They just aren't as taut, and they're more likely to kind of get floppy and start to fall over time, especially if you've also got some pressure management issues. And every pregnant person has pressure management issues, right?
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So what I mean by pressure is intra-abdominal pressure. So a great example is pregnancy. When there's a person inside your abdominal cavity, there's a lot of pressure pushing out in all directions. And the tissues of the center of the body are designed to work together to sort of meet that pressure, manage that pressure so that we don't get basically hernias. I mean, when you have pressure management deficits, you'll see a hernia. You might get one going north, like a hiatal hernia, that esophageal stomach herniation up through the esophagus. You might get diastasis recti, which is, you know, essentially a spreading out, kind of a hernia-like event at the midline. You might get other abdominal hernias, or you might get pelvic organ prolapse, which is pressure going down. So you've got pressure moving in all these different directions. And ideally, the tissues of the pelvis and the pelvic floor muscles can help to support all those organs and keep them up where they belong as they meet that pressure that's coming down from the pregnancy. Now, absent a pregnancy, you may have increased intra-abdominal pressure with things like weightlifting or picking up the groceries or picking up your toddler or breathing or sneezing. All these things represent intra-abdominal pressure increases that the tissues of the trunk and the deep core have to meet so that you don't have pressure pushing out too far into a prolapsed organ or an abdominal hernia or that the things I just mentioned.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. So for the hypermobile person, are you more often seeing diastasis? I'm also thinking about the rib flare and posture of the hypermobile person and just more laxity in their ligaments.
Yes, for sure. I see diastasis recti in a lot of hypermobile people. I haven't seen any evidence, you know, that looks at prevalence of that. That would be interesting to see. My guess is that the diastasis is going to be more prevalent among people with hypermobility at baseline.
That's what I was thinking. So I've been taking this, it's actually physical therapy course and I'm fascinated about it. And it's really just for pregnant folks and postpartum. And they're constantly talking about posture and breathing. And I started to think about, as I was reading your book and hypermobility and posture, that a lot of people that are hypermobile, and I live in this body, I tend to lock my knees. I tend to... catch myself doing this all the time, like just pushing my whole abdomen forward and rib flaring. And I'm like, Deb, you know better. Like I'm constantly having to fight my habits and correcting my posture and thinking about the habit of just pressing into the front body and rib flare as a hypermobile stance. It feels like, of course, that person is going to have diastasis, especially postpartum, where there's already been some compromise of that linea alba. That makes sense. My hypothesis makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Definitely. I think, you know, when I am treating someone with diastasis recti, posture is huge. The position of the rib cage is big.
We talk about that. I love the idea of the ribs and the pelvis. When I teach this, I get these two bowls and I stack them and I show the bowls opening to the front and how that's rib flare and a deep anterior tilt. And then I close them and show the back. Will you talk about the importance of the pelvis and the rib alignment?
Yeah. So the pelvic bowl, I love that. Just two bowls stacked, you know, one on top of the other upside down.
Yeah.
or maybe it's a bowl and its lid, right? So the rib cage is on top, pelvis on the bottom. And when they are stacked in relationship, so that they're both basically neutral-ish, I like to say, right? So that we don't get our rulers out necessarily. Right. But when we bring the front ribs back and down so that the rib cage stacks over the pelvis and we get out of our big tailbone tuck or the opposite, wherever we are, and we come more towards a neutralish pelvis, then those things are stacked on top of each other. And in that position, we have more access to our deep core muscles working optimally to support us. And we also have better access to our gluteus maximus to support us against gravity. It's just standing up. And so we're setting ourselves up for success just by stacking our bones in a certain way so that we're relating to gravity in a more easeful kind of way. And this is especially important in the case of hypermobility. And it's certainly important in the case of pregnancy when we already have all this pressure in the front of the belly that's pushing us into that rib flare. The rib flare is where those low ribs in the front poke forward and we're in that sway back position. And it's just a lot of work to hold up this body and gravity differently. Just a lot of work. So we get tired and we flop into our old habits, and that's okay. But the more we can become aware of that, the more we have an ability to develop some new habits, hopefully, and develop some strength to hold ourselves differently. So dropping those front ribs is step one. To get out of that rib flare, because the rib flare isn't just forward, it's also lateral. It's a lateral pull on that midline fascia.
So I like that. So thinking about, I'm trying to think of tips for those that are out there that are either pregnant or postpartum, just to be aware of their posture. So noticing their rib flare, what else should they notice or think about just checking in with themselves on their posture?
Yeah, where their weight lands. You know, just if you're standing or even sitting for a prolonged period, sometimes we just shift our weight way forward, like what you were describing. You notice in your habit, and I have the same habit too. If I'm standing for any length of time, I tend to throw my whole pelvis forward so that my center of mass is over my toes instead of over my heels. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, we can pretty much guarantee that the relationship between the pelvis and the rib cage has gotten all wonky. And we're going to be more likely to fall into those habits that don't really serve our core integrity, you know, that we come out with postpartum. So just backing it up, you know, that's when I talk about posture, I wrote a chapter on posture in my book. The two tips I give people are back it up and stack it up. And the backing it up means back up your pelvis so that it's over your heels, not over your toes. And when you do that, it often falls into a little more neutral-ish kind of place on its own. And then you can stack your rib cage on top of that.
As we're talking, I'm like, I see myself leaning into the mic, like belly first. So
yeah, exactly.
It's a constant reminder. It's a lot, but I love that you offered very tangible tips. Back it up, stack it up. I absolutely love that. All right. So in your book, you talk about the wise use of stretching. Can you explain that?
Yes. So stretching is not the devil for hypermobile people. I've had so many people tell me that stretching is just terrible. I should never do it. And I have a hypermobility syndrome called hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a difference in connective tissue that causes all, you know, all my floppy connective tissue and all the associated challenges with that. But, you know, even for people who have hypermobility syndrome, stretching isn't the problem, but stretching all the way to end range and hanging out there passively is problematic. It is more likely, especially in a forward fold kind of situation, like prolonged forward folding over and over and over for years at a time, which is what yoga practitioners love to do, it seems, that leads to bigger problems with the sacroiliac joint and hamstring strains that a lot of people have. And certainly during pregnancy, we're dealing with sacroiliac joint pain so much. And the hypermobile person, you can almost guarantee they're going to have SI joint pain at some point. So getting out of the long holds at end range that are floppy passive style, that should happen. That's not usually going to go well for somebody. It feels good in the moment because they're like, oh, I really feel it, right? If they have SI joint pain and they're flopped into a forward fold, they might really feel it in that area, quote unquote. But then later they have more nagging pain or the next day it's just a little irritated. And what usually goes better is to limit that or just kind of eliminate, at least for a while, that end range stretching, back away from end range and do a more active version of the stretch where you're engaging your muscles. So let's use pigeon pose as an example.
I was just thinking about that. When you talk about SI pain, I'm like, oh, pigeon. That is a pose I find that I have so many students like, let me do it. It feels so good. I'm like, let's not, because you're going to wobble out of the house, out of the room, because it's just so afterwards. It's one of those yummy during, regret after. So
it is. Yeah. And so we really have to start monitoring our response to practice and then make changes, you know, because we get attached to the idea of what postures we're supposed to do or what they're supposed to look like. And we really need to start noticing, hey, some of these postures are contributing to our aches and pains and we don't have to do that. Let's just scrap that. Pigeon pose is a great example, especially if there's like a hip problem or a labral tear in the hip, you know, in addition to the SI joint. So we could flop into pigeon pose. I could put my front knee forward and then just flop and forward fold over that front knee and just hang out at end range. That's one way to do the pigeon. Or I could come up, maybe even support my front hip so that I'm not flopping to the floor. And I could maybe isometrically draw my two legs together while I'm in the pigeon pose. Now I'm still stretching. It's going to be very sensation rich. I feel a lot of stuff when I'm there, but I am contracting my muscles and I'm really preventing myself from going to that end range. And I'm likely to have better outcomes with that if I'm hypermobile.
Yeah. In prenatal class, we actually just have them do ankle to knee. I just find it's a little, it's when I'm dealing with having to stabilize so much with so many people, I'm like, let's just do ankle to knee. It gets kind of the same thing, but yeah, I find pigeon is a little bit problematic.
It is problematic. And then there's also just static versus dynamic. Mm-hmm. I love dynamic stretching, which is where you just move in and out of a stretch, slowly and really mindfully. And I love the slow movement because slow movement helps you develop better proprioception and body awareness and where you are in space. And that's just really important and also helps you develop motor control, which you could think of as stability in motion, controlling our movement through space. That's what a really slow dynamic version of stretching really helps us cultivate. And that's so useful. It can be interesting for a sensation of stretch. You know, we're just not staying there for very long. Again, we don't even have to go to end range, but we have brought lots of blood flow to the muscles. They are, you know, kind of getting juiced up, and muscles love dynamic stretching, honestly.
That's how I like to practice. I like to go like slow and gooey, and I don't like fast paced, but you totally are speaking my language. So as you were talking, I kept thinking about, and I don't know a ton about it, so you can maybe jump in, yin yoga for a pregnant body, those long holds. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts on that is it would be kind of an outlier pregnant body that I'd recommend yin yoga for, just because of that laxity in the tissues. Now, the proof is always in the pudding, and I'm always going to come back to, you know, study your experience honestly and adjust accordingly. But I'm not going to expect yin yoga to go very well for the hypermobile practitioner because it involves end range passive stretching held for a long time. And what happens to the connective tissue in that long held end range passive stretch is called tissue creep. It's where collagenous tissues, connective tissues, start to kind of melt and spread out. And they take time to do that. That's the whole idea of yin yoga, 3 to 5 minutes or more to deform. That's what we would call it in mechanics, deform the tissue. And then that collagenous connective tissue after the stretch takes longer to recoil or to return back to its original length relative to muscle. And in some cases, you can certainly create a plastic change in the tissue where it doesn't return to its normal length. And that's basically tissue failure. And we don't really ever want to go there.
No, that doesn't sound good. Right.
So basically, when you stretch a long time at end range, you have that impact to your connective tissue, which, you know, might for some people be an awesome thing. And for other people might not be an awesome thing because it's going to leave the area less stable, at least temporarily. And that presence of that instability triggers the hypermobile nervous system into a cue of danger. And how it responds to that is more muscle tension, mm-hmm. right? When the body senses that instability. Yeah. And oftentimes bendy people find that if they do stretching at end range, the body responds with this kind of, this more tension. It's almost like the body's way of saying, I didn't feel safe with that.
That's actually, I'm glad you brought that up. That made me think about in postnatal yoga, when we're doing pelvic floor work, I often say, I say this to students as well as our teacher trainees, don't assume that because someone had a baby come out their vagina that they're all of a sudden like loose and open. You can actually recoil and the muscles be tight postpartum.
Yes.
It's not just, we don't just assume or better Kegel mm-hmm. it up, but you're also bringing up a great point about, gosh, my brain's going in so many directions that we often hear people say, oh, do what feels good. Now, again, I never want to scare students or teacher trainees and be like, oh my God, you're going to hurt yourself. But I think what, as I'll speak to the teacher person, because I'm sure we have yoga teachers listening, that we need to be mindful with a keen eye of how we instruct people to move into stretch, not go to their end range, find support, as we talked about, find that support to enjoy some mobility. Mm-hmm. But if we just leave it to the student and we say, just do what feels good, and maybe there's not a lot of proprioception, or maybe they're just enjoying that juiciness of all those hormones, they could injure themselves. Am I correct mm-hmm. about that?
Yeah, they're more prone for strains and sprains, you know, ligament sprains and tendon strains. Absolutely.
I'm thinking SI, I'm thinking symphysis pubis dysfunction. And then, then we need, and now I'll speak to the teachers, then we need the teachers, especially general population yoga teachers who have the occasional pregnant student come in. They should know about these changes because if mm-hmm. they just say to their student again, just do what feels good, they may not be offering them support of like, hey, I totally trust you, but I'm going to invite you not to go so far into X, Y, and Z. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do think that's important. And studying your own experience and doing, quote, what feels good needs to apply not just to the moment. This is, we have got to study mm-hmm. our response to things. And sometimes that means pausing through the practice, pausing to notice, how's my body feel after doing that pigeon pose, for example? Let me just take a moment to really inquire that, right? Or how do I feel later that night after this practice or the next day?
Yes.
And really monitor those responses. And as if we're teaching our students that yoga literally does not care how far you go into your postures, then the stretch, you know, it kind of takes the pressure off.
What is it for?
Right. Because everyone thinks they're supposed to always go farther.
Yeah.
And we have to teach them that that's not the case. And with a hypermobile person, hypermobile people just don't have as good proprioception because of their floppy connective tissue. They literally don't know where their body is in space as clearly. So they won't feel anything sometimes until they get to end range. Mm-hmm. They may not feel any stretch until they're already there. So we have to help them come back. You know, let's come back away. Let's go to 80% or something. And let's just study this. And maybe we can learn to feel things sooner. So it's really about training our ability to notice more subtle sensations before we get to end range. And we have to slow down and we have to turn in and really study that. And yeah. if there's rock and roll music going on and everybody's moving fast and our attention is drawn externally all the time, it's really hard to do that. So we really have to say, study your experience. Let's go to 80%, you know, or move so slowly into the stretch so that you can feel the first little whiff, the first hint of stretch. And we're going to stop right there. Just because it's training our sensory system, really, and training our proprioception to be able to pick up on some clues that the body's giving us, but we're just missing them because we're so used to going to end range.
Yeah. Oh, this is so good. I'm really enjoying this. I think it's such, first of all, I love hearing this and I'm so excited that the community is hearing this. Okay. When we come back, we're going to take one more quick break. We're going to talk about your book as well as, cause I know you're a parent. If you have a tip or piece of advice you'd like to offer new or expectant parents, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. So first let's do your tip and then I want to hear all about your book. All right. So what is one tip or piece of advice you would like to offer new or expectant parents?
Oh goodness. I remember you asking me this last time.
I always wrap it up with this.
I'll probably say the same thing, which is take your time. You know, that's what I learned. I had two childbirths, pregnancies and childbirths, and two postpartum periods that were both really rough. Mm. And part of that is because of my connective tissue disorder and that I didn't know about at the time, actually, because this is more recent understanding of my own condition. So, but regardless, if you have a hypermobility syndrome or not, recovery from childbirth takes longer than you want it to. And that's just the way it is. So don't be in a rush. You're not a rubber band. Give yourself as much time, a year, 2 years. I mean, we're talking time to really fully recover. And pacing is critical because you blow out your limited energy and then you really hit a wall, you know, 3 or 6 months in.
As I yawn, yes. So tell me a little bit about your book.
Yeah. So the book is called Yoga for Bendy People. And I wrote this book for yoga teachers and yoga practitioners who have hypermobility. So it'd be totally appropriate for any practitioner who might be pregnant, let's say, or postpartum, but also if they have an underlying hypermobility syndrome, it's absolutely for them. Because so often yoga gets a bad rap in hypermobility world because of the association with stretching and end range exploitation and all that. But my book really says it doesn't have to be that way. And we need to clarify what we mean by yoga, and then we need to understand hypermobility, and then we need to use all the tools of yoga, not just asana, but we've got pranayama and meditative practices, and we've got all of an ethical kind of guidelines. I bring all that into it to say, how can we apply these tools to this population so that yoga supports them? Because the other thing, the conversation about yoga and hypermobility often ends with, how do we avoid injury? How do hypermobile people avoid injury? And that's important, but like that's usually where it ends. And I think there's way more to say about how does yoga actually help these people thrive, mm-hmm. really support them given their unique needs. And so that's really what the book is about.
I've been perusing through it and I'm really enjoying it. Thank you for giving me a copy. I'm really enjoying it. I relate to it. And when I find something like this, it gets me excited to read it, because then I like to share this stuff with my students. Yeah. I always get lit up when there's something new that sparks, because I get really excited to come into class and be like, this is cool. What we're going to explore. And it really suits the perinatal community so well. So thank you for your book. It's just wonderful. So where can people find your work?
Yep. So my website is just libbyhinesley.com. And I have another website, which is anatomybites.com. So Anatomy Bites is an anatomy membership program that I offer for yoga teachers who want to learn anatomy in a fun and supportive and very specifically yoga relevant way. And so that's where you can find out about that. And on Instagram, you can find me at Libby Hinesley PT. So any of those ways are good to keep up with all of my happenings and the book happenings.
Where can people find the book?
Well, the book's going to be, ebook's going to be out mid-May. So it kind of depends on what airs. And then paperback will be out early June. And they will be able to find it on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, et cetera.
How cool is that going to be for you to go into a bookstore and be like, that's my book?
It's going to be very, very cool. And during May, I'll be really pushing the ebook launch on Amazon to kind of get my exploit the algorithm, basically, so that more eyeballs get on this book as the paper book comes out in June. So
that is so exciting. I'm so happy for you. And the book is really well done. So thank you for giving me a copy as well as putting it out in the world. I think it's just so, so helpful. Well, thank you for another amazing conversation. I really enjoyed this.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.